Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Big Move podcast. Today, I am here with Eunice Lucero. So still in NYC, and I'm super excited about my second guest. She is the editor-in-chief at All Things Hair US, which is Unilever's editorial hair hub. She is a lifelong beauty obsessive. Eunice officially started her editorial career in 2004 in the Philippines for renowned local publications such as Pink, Chalk, Sugar Sugar, K-Mag, Style Bible, and Preview. Eunice moved to NYC in 2013 after her post as editor-in-chief at Sparkling, which is Asia's first ever English K-pop magazine. Her integration into New York and Brooklyn's New Age and astrology community, which is another longtime interest since picking up the study at 12 years old, brought her to finally getting her astrology certification under prominent astrologer and mentor Rebecca Gordon. Eunice, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you for having me. It is a sweltering day in New York City today.
It is.
But we're down at your shared office space in Tribeca. Is this considered Tribeca?
This is Tribeca.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So I'm really excited to have you on today. But to just kick it off, we'll just do a couple like icebreaker questions.
Okay.
So the first is, what are the first three things that you do when you wake up in the morning?
Check my phone, check my email, which I know I'm not really supposed to do. I'm trying to be less reactive. I heard that on a self-care podcast somewhere. I'm trying to integrate that into my life.
I like that.
And I actually check my astrology app for the day, which kind of sets the mood for the whole routine.
Okay, cool. I can't wait to hear more about that, by the way. I'm extremely
so
fascinated.
I have two astrology apps that I check on the daily. The first is Deluxe Moon, and it actually isn't that much of an astrology app more than it is a moon tracking app. And it just tells you what sign the moon's in for the day and what phase it is. And not to get too geeky and deep into that, but like that kind of sets the tone of like what I'm going to do for the day. Like it actually tells you if it's a great time to actually do major exercise or to kind of cut your hair or color your hair. I am that person who actually follows that moon tracking app just for like my beauty stuff and also just kind of like how to interact with people that day. They say if it's a good day to kind of like make a presentation or kind of assert yourself at work or something like that. Like
that is so interesting.
Feel free to cut me off if this is getting too deep astrology for you, but it's just, yeah.
This is the first that I honestly have heard about astrology. So I have a few more questions and we'll get into those.
Well,
but
I mean, it's a great time to actually be hearing about it because it's everywhere at the moment. And for better or worse, everyone's been getting into it, and which means that more information is out there for both the casual observer and for people who are really deep into it.
Sure.
The community is definitely growing, and yeah, there's a lot more to digest, but it's a really, really, really fun and informative space, and I'm really happy that a lot more people are finally sinking their teeth into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, cool. We'll get more into that. Second icebreaker is, what is your favorite alcoholic beverage?
Gin and soda.
Not
tonic, just soda. Yeah.
Okay, that is a curveball, because coming from London, it's all about the G&T.
Yes, it is.
Oh my gosh, so why soda and why not tonic?
So my mom was a flight attendant when I was a girl growing up, and she always told me that if ever I did start drinking, I would be better off choosing like the clearest liquor or spirits ever just to avoid a hangover. And so I just grew up thinking that, you know, vodka and gin were like just the cleanest ways to go. And obviously I needed to water that down with something if I didn't really just want to go off the rails each time. And I heard someone also told me that there was so much sugar in tonic water that I would be better off sticking to soda.
Okay. So, I've heard that too. I feel like there is definitely more sugar in soda in tonic water.
You know, honestly, like it does work. I don't know if it's because it's already been in my head, but like I do wake up feeling way better than if I just did some shots of Patron or whiskey or, you know, anything of that nature. So I steer away from the orange drinks as much as I can, even though my husband loves them. And I do indulge here and there. But yeah, my drink of choice has always been a gin and soda.
Okay.
Specifically Hendrix with cucumber.
Ooh, okay, cool. That's a good tip. I'm going to have to try that. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of just like get into your background, where you're from. So can you tell us where you grew up in Asia and sort of like what that experience was like?
Okay, so I grew up in Manila and I was always, always into writing. I was a huge bookworm. I wrote my first poem when I was 6 years old, and I just never grew out of it. I was never the athletic person, even though I did all the requisite, you know, co-curriculars, like ballet and all that. But it was always about books and reading and, surprisingly, astrology for me. My dad really was into it. We always had books around the house on the subject, because they grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s, so he was a major, like, you know, they were into the whole Age of Aquarius thing, even as a baby. So I grew up in a very creative household. We were very deep into music, into writing. They always encouraged my writing and my bookworming. Like, one time my dad even had to cut me off to, like, one book a day because I was just going through my summer reading list so quickly that he was afraid I wouldn't make any friends.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so I guess that was just kind of naturally progressed into kind of almost a career. Like, I was always in a creative writing elective or class in high school on the school paper in college and stuff like that, creative paper. But then, surprisingly enough, I took up business in college just because I was afraid to just go off, like, too much off the woo-woo end. I just figured, you know, and back in, like, the late 90s, I don't know, it wasn't as, I mean, at least in Asia, we still had that kind of, like, preconception that, you know, like, a liberal arts education wouldn't really get you far, you know, at least in my perspective. So, in order to give myself just kind of a semblance of discipline, I went to business school, and then, I mean, I took a business in school, and then after graduation, I realized that, you know, magazines and the magazine and publishing industry was a great way to kind of marry the two loves of my life, like kind of like that structure and routine of, you know, taking up business and marketing and stuff, also with, like, obviously the art of writing and editorial and, you know, service journalism. So, yeah, and that somehow found me, and I've always just been a beauty junkie.
Sure.
Like, it's something that I kind of just can keep talking about every single day without getting tired of it.
And totally.
That's actually what I've been doing since for the rest of my life.
I can relate.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then I just found myself, I found someone who was looking for a beauty consultant for this teen magazine, Pink, and she just asked me, like, kind of, like, these really cursory questions about, like, what my favorite brand was and whatever. And I remember emailing her this long, really in-depth kind of thesis on why I loved Stila back in the day.
Oh,
right?
My God, I remember Stila.
Exactly.
I mean, they are still around today,
But, like, I remember when they were really, really big.
Sure.
Right? Yeah, so, and how, like, I basically just kind of geeked out completely.
Yeah.
And then the next day she emailed me and, you know, welcomed me to the fold. And I guess that was kind of like my baby intro into beauty editorial. And then it was just like a step off from there. And then I started, like, contributing more regularly to different magazines and then full-time employee and then...
Yeah, absolutely. So your editorial career really took off, obviously, at a young age, and you were in Asia. So then when did your official move to NYC kind of come about?
So I was always going back and forth to the States, primarily because of my home life and my background. Like, My mom is half American. My dad's Filipino. So I always visited relatives. I always had to summer here and there. And like I spent like my teen summers in San Francisco. And then right when I wanted to make the move to publishing and editorial, I decided I wanted to see how it was to vacation in the East Coast, just because I knew that this was where the hub of, you know, the major hub of all like these publications were. I think I would say it was after I took kind of a summer intensive in NYU in 2008 that, so by the time I got back from that, I couldn't really shake off the fact that I kind of wanted to start a life here someday, you know, but I still had a job waiting back for me in Manila at that time. But a couple years later, I think 5 years later, I decided, you know what, I think it's time to make the move.
Yeah.
And I had just gotten out of a long-term relationship at that time. And I was like, there's really no reason for me to not just try this out once and for all.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I remember July of 2013 is, so pretty much like almost 6 years to the day.
Wow. Yeah, you've been here a while.
Is when I kind of decided to completely repatriate in New York City. So, yeah, there really wasn't any other state that I was looking to move to, obviously, because I figured, you know, this is where I really wanted to make a mark in the publishing world. And it was where, I mean, I also had some friends here and there too who lived in the city. So I figured that this would be a great way to integrate. It wouldn't be too hard on me. Like 6 years ago is when the official move began.
Wow. And so it sounds like your transition was almost like gradual. Like you said, you were coming back and forth. So I imagine that must have helped in a way.
It wasn't really that much of a huge culture shock. It wasn't like, this was the first time ever. I was a pretty well-seasoned traveler when I was younger, you know, given my background and also the nature of the work.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, homesickness for sure, especially the first few years. Just the food, the weather is completely opposite of what I grew up with.
Yeah, what is the weather like it's called Manila.
Manila.
Where exactly is that?
It's in the Philippines.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's a tropical country.
Oh my gosh.
And it's pretty much beach weather all year round.
Okay.
But then it also gets really humid and muggy. And it's not like we're by the beach all the time. So yeah we do have to get used to trying to deal with all this like humidity, which is why like New York in July isn't really that much of a surprise to deal with for
me.
Like,
honestly. You're probably used to it.
I'm just like, wow, I feel like this is kind of nostalgic.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been in New York for a while. Mm-hmm. What are the things that you love most about life in New York City? Mm-hmm. Are there things that you maybe don't love or that you miss from back home?
The things I miss first, the food, obviously. I can just... I grew up with Filipino food. It is comfort food for me. You know, rainy day food, sick in bed food, obviously.
Okay, what is like your what would be the go-to?
It's called sinigang. It's like it's a stew that, you know, my mom, and I'm sure all other Filipino moms can say the same, but she does best. And like, so it's just always been like a staple comfort food for me. And also like I just kind of miss the fact that I don't have to walk everywhere when I'm back home in Manila. Like, it's not exactly as big of a walking city as New York is. So I did leave a considerable number of heels behind, which kind of still irks me to this day. But other than that, and obviously, like, friends and family.
Of course.
I grew up with. But in this day and age of Skype and FaceTime, that's an easier fix.
That's so true.
The things I love about New York, well, I love the fact that you can just get on the subway here and in Manhattan and be in Brooklyn or the Bronx or wherever you want to be within, you know, within New York City in like 30 minutes.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
It's weird. And there's always something going on. You know, the cliche is true. Like, you know,
it's it is
literally
true.
The city that never sleeps, mm-hmm. For better or worse, like, which is great if you move here and you're single and you're trying to get your feet wet.
There's endless, like, endless bars. Right. There's endless social things.
Exactly. Yeah. Which also, you know, like, a part of me sometimes, I get hit by, like, weird cases of FOMO where I'm like, if I don't go out this weekend, does it mean I'm missing out on potentially the best party of my life happening in Brooklyn somewhere that I don't even know about? But, you know, just the fact that I know that something exciting is always happening in New York is equally exhilarating and terrifying to me.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I completely relate. I was here single in my 20s and it was literally the most fun time. My husband will probably kill me, but sorry. best time. I tell everybody, especially in the UK, I think the British definitely, they glamorize New York. They love it so much. They want to live here. And I say it is best in your 20s. yeah, exactly.
I know I just talked about it, but also,
absolutely.
But yeah, I think it is, best in your 20s or your early 30s, right when you're just kind of like freshly independent, you know, reasonably financially capable, you know, because it is not a cheap city. But yeah, definitely just kind of when you're first venturing out into the world and you're just kind of like spreading your wings, as they say, like it's really, there's no place like it. Like there's something for everybody. And, you know, you can find, you know, they always say that it's hard to find your tribe in New York because a lot of people move here from somewhere else. So oftentimes, like, all the friend groups are already taken by the time you move in and it's hard to integrate. But I feel like if you just make the effort, like, I personally, even though I did have scattered friends here and there, like, one of the reasons I got into my astrology community is I started joining meetups from, like, literally meetup.com.
Oh, that's
just
amazing.
To, like, watch or, like, to attend all these seminars and workshops and stuff because I found myself just getting really depressed and lonely on the weekends. And I'm like, I don't want to keep clubbing. I don't want to keep doing this. I really want to kind of, like, you know, where else can I actually venture out and actually, you know, thrive into this astrology thing?
That's so, a really good tip.
Yeah. So I just started joining those things and, like, I attended some seminars and workshops and stuff and I started seeing the same people. And then eventually that's when I kind of just tapped one on the shoulder and I was turned out to be Rebecca Gordon. And she's like, you know what? I'm holding this short, like, beginner course in astrology, you know, and you should come, you know, seeing as you're clearly interested. And then things just started snowballing from there. Like, I enrolled in her, like, beginner astrology course. I got certified after the intermediate, a couple of weeks after. And then here we are. And then obviously now when I see all these, like, awesome, accomplished astrologers on Instagram and, you know, where else. And I'm like, I know this person. I actually saw her. I actually met her through these meetups and, like, I actually been to her, like, talks and stuff. And it's just a really great way to kind of, like, venture into that community. If if you find yourself having no friends in the beginning and stuff and just, you know, just make use of your idle time.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like that was very, like, kind of smooth transition. And
I mean, I might make it sound like that, but it's definitely not. There are a lot of, like, weird, lonely, kind of angst-ridden nights.
I'm sure. Okay, and that brings me sort of to some of my questions around you, your interest in astrology. You are a certified astrologer. That is so interesting. So can you kind of tell us, like, the interest in astrology, like, how did it come about? You said you were young.
Right. Yeah, I was... I grew up with it around the house, like, very, very young. My dad and I both have the same sign, so I guess, like, all his books I could read too and, like, read up on my own sign. So, it was never really a taboo topic in the household, even though we were a Catholic family. And I really don't see any kind of conflict, even to this day. So don't at me, but yeah, like I always read up on it. There was always, like, a wealth of resource around the house. And then when I was 12 years old, I think it was a science teacher, or basically, like, we had to come up with a term paper, And we had a really, really, really long winter holiday break that year because I think the Pope was in town. So,
oh my God.
Like, yeah, like all Catholic schools got like a huge kind of reprieve. But so during that break, we wrote a term paper, and mine was on actually the constellations in the zodiac. So, and at 12 years old, I think that's kind of what, you know, solidified the whole kind of foundation for me. And then just from then on, like, and I did so much research, you know, just like your typical 12-year-old.
Sure, sure. You know, like, you're like immersed
just,
in it.
Yeah. Just completely like, oh my God, obsessed.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Yeah.
So I just did all of that. And then just from there, I could, you know, everything new to the topic just really came easy for me to memorize and stuff like that. And you just knew it by heart.
Sure.
So yeah, by the time I hit high school and college, you're kind of known as that resident kind of like walking Wikipedia.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
I mean, and not to say that I know everything about the topic, but it's just like amongst my peer group, you know,
they're right,
like,
right, right.
What are you talking? And this is like in the, you know, mid 90s and 90s, you know, they were like, all right, you know, and this is the time when people thought cusps were still a thing, you know, and
yeah.
So stuff like that. So yeah, like that was kind of like the origin story of that.
Sure.
And then certified, well, I mean, it might sound like such a big, I mean, I don't really think, because I don't like asking, I don't like getting a fee from friends just yet, just because like I don't really consider myself a practicing
sure.
kind of astrology. Like I really don't. I don't have my own private practice yet. Is
sure.
what I'm saying.
Okay.
But yeah, I do have the creds like from Rebecca School, and I do readings for friends here and there, but for a different exchange. But once I get that up and running, eventually when I feel like I'm done with like this wedding planning thing, which we're probably going to be talking about
sure.
in a bit.
Oh my gosh,
but yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
your ring is beautiful.
Yeah, just too many things going on at this time, and you know, and it's kind of like a split of energy. So
sure,
yeah.
Do you have like any key takeaways from like your studies of astrology, or maybe some like main things that really stick out in your mind that you learned from like Rebecca for the audience, maybe for people that are like brand new to astrology, AKA me?
Well, like my main takeaway is just, it gives you the thing about astrology that I love the most and I kind of value the most is, if anything, it makes you more empathetic towards other people. Like, instead of just writing someone off for being a certain way that you don't necessarily gel with or understand even. But once you get into the astrology of this person, this person's natal chart, or like literally like, you know, her background, his or her background, like it gives you that much more perspective. And it's just kind of a way of being more, it's a tool that makes you more compassionate with other people.
Sure.
You know, and honestly, in this day and age, anything that kind of facilitates that is a huge plus in my book. Like, if there's a tool that can make me understand, like, my neighbor so much more better than, like,
yeah.
just, you know, like, face value, then great, you know? And I also think that's one of the reasons why so many people are turning to, like, these arts to kind of understand other people, too, because there's just so much chaos going on. There's just so much uncertainty. Like, they want to get a handle on why they're like this, why other people are like that, or why the climate is like this, like, mm-hmm. why the energy is like this, like, which is why, like, sometimes it skews the other direction, and they kind of, like, you know, minimize it to the point that, oh, you know, God damn it, it's just Mercury retrograde again. You know,
right.
Like obviously that's just the very, very tip of the iceberg, this whole soup of, you know, astrological climate. But like, it's, you know, people are trying to find meaning. And I feel like astrology, you know, for what it's worth, kind of helps people give people that meaning.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. That's extremely valuable. I can totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. So kind of transitioning from your background in astrology to why we're kind of here on the podcast.
Right.
So how did
I also do beauty.
You are also a beauty junkie.
Right,
but ultimately,
yeah.
like how did you land your gig as your editor in chief at All Things Hair US?
Right.
Yeah. So how did that come about for you?
I don't know. Well, okay. So, Back to where we were before I went on this tangent. So I was and still am, and I guess will forever be, a beauty obsessive. Like, I have been in the beauty editorial and service journalism space for, I would say, 15 years, give or take, at this point. And I moved to the States and obviously quit my job in Manila as an editor, and had to take on freelancing jobs here for the first few months. And that meant just taking any writing job, literally, that fell within my scope of experience, which actually proved me, you know, proved to be an advantage, because that was like the beginning of the SEO boom,
sure.
I guess. And then, which meant that I had to get my feet wet in such a short time in that space, which kind of helped me find this job, because when this opening came out, I had already gotten that SEO experience under my belt from my days freelancing, and they were looking for a seasoned beauty editor on a senior editor role, and so I applied, and I guess and it was under All Things Hair, but we were under an agency, Green Park, so I just applied to that role opening, and a year later, the editor-in-chief left, and she recommended me for the role, and now here I am.
Okay, amazing. And then All Things Hair is obviously, it's owned by Unilever.
Right.
So how did All Things Hair kind of come to life, and then where does it kind of sit in the digital landscape currently?
So it's a relatively new space. Obviously, I mean, branded content has been here forever, but I feel like in recent years, it's just reached a whole other level of kind of, you know, it's been ramping up recently.
Totally.
And especially like with an editorial vein, like All Things Hair is in that sweet spot of advertorial that doesn't really feel like you're kind of pushing like the, you know, just products for the hell of it.
Sure.
Like, we also put a huge premium on kind of service journalism and kind of like answering, you know, customer intent and, you know, just kind of getting to the heart of each problem, which is why, like, we say that, and which is why we are actually like fueled by Google search, because every single article on the site is a product of someone searching for that issue.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's super smart. And then from an SEO perspective,
yeah, from an SEO perspective, obviously, like, let's say, you know, the best mousse for curly hair.
Sure.
Like, an article that we have on that has, you know, stemmed from someone actually putting in those words through Google.
Okay.
And it just feels like, even if we do it from a branded content perspective, as an editor, it just feels very satisfying, and, you know, it kind of warms my heart to know that, you know, just in your little kind of space, you're able to answer this, you know, for all you know, life-changing query from someone, you know, from someone out there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of what drives me to just keep doing what I'm doing. And, you know, and which is why I feel like hair is, and what I do, beauty, is actually one of the most important things too, because it really means a lot of things to a whole different lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's emotional. It's confidence building. And so something that you and I kind of chatted on briefly before and we wanted to include in the podcast was sort of the importance of inclusivity, mm-hmm. and tackling the issue like of a diversity in the hair world.
Right.
So how does this kind of come up in your current role at All Things Hair?
Well, we try to, obviously all the content on the site, like I said, has been called from a series of many, you know, a diverse group of queries online, and we try to address each and every one of those. And a lot of those recently has been in the natural hair space, in the Asian hair space, like all different textures, all different kinds and types of hair. And we try as much as we can, and we're doing our best to be as inclusive and open as possible and in addressing all these concerns. And even most recently, we actually have a microsite dedicated to natural hair and the care and styling of it, which I'm very happy about. So yeah, we definitely try to be as open and as inclusive as possible when it comes to talking about hair concerns, especially in this day and age when, you know, like, it's never just one hair type. It's never just one hair color, length, texture, you name it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so from your seat sort of in the last few years, have you really seen this, like, this conversation, like, evolve, would you say?
Definitely.
Or maybe, like not in, do you think it's in a place where you're happy with now? Or do you think there's, like, a lot more room sort of for growth?
It's definitely, yeah, there's definitely a lot more room for growth. You know, even if we are where we are right now, like, we weren't here, like, a couple years ago. Like, we couldn't talk about, like, when we talk about Dutch braids, like, we weren't as educated about, you know, just saying, like, the difference between Dutch braids and cornrows. It's a very kind of, like, you know, there's a lot of conversation on, like, how to correctly term certain styles that were previously just used within the natural hair community.
Sure.
Without sounding like you're appropriating them for any other community, you know, like, so, and there's a lot of, even us as editors, we're consistently growing and trying to educate ourselves into, like, the right verbiage and how to, like, address these topics, you know. I mean, I'm not a part of the natural hair community, which is why, like, we try to kind of have, like, that solid network of people who can, you know, advocate for these hair types themselves, you know. So we love having these relationships with influencers or with writers within that community to actually help educate us as well, even though we are editors.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, there's so many different hair types, and it's good to be educated across the board, especially when you're, like, living and breathing and you're working in it.
Right. Yeah. No, and, like, there's always room for growth, like I said. And yeah, it's just kind of an ever evolving space as well. Like, now that there are so many different brands who are addressing like the needs of different hair types altogether and realizing that it's not just one single hair type, you know?
Definitely.
So that's kind of an exciting space to be in. And I can't wait for it to even, you know, for the net to widen even further.
Yeah, absolutely. So to sort of just wrap up this career section of the podcast, do you have any main tips for landing, like, a covetable role, which you obviously have sort of in the beauty industry? Any, like, one or two top tips you have?
I would say just never, ever stop looking. Like, no matter. I have heard more no's in my life in the last, I would say, 5 years of my career than I've had my entire life. Like, just because, you know, you're in, especially New York City, you're in such a competitive city, you're such in a competitive field. Everybody wants to have their voice heard now, especially now that everyone has a platform. Like, it's so much more harder for editors or writers to actually find their space.
Totally.
I mean, through a magazine and stuff like that, through brands. So I would say just never stop looking, just keep your head up and always just realize that, you know, like, you'll find your tribe soon. Like, just make sure that you're looking in the right places too. And don't ever think that just because it hasn't happened for you in the first 2-3 years that it never will.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Love that tip. So we'll kind of get into hair, beauty, your current routine. So I see that we are both blonde. We both treat our hair.
Definitely.
So how do you take care of your color treated hair? Do you have any, like, main tips for the audience?
Right.
And sort of your current hair routine?
So Renee Valerie from TG is the lovely artist who helps me maintain my current level of ash blonde. And we've settled on this, like, strategy where we actually leave the ends a bit smudgy because, number one, I'm lazy. Number two, it just affords me that much more wiggle room between touch-ups. And number three, I like kind of the look of a dirtier blonde versus, like, a really platinum beach blonde because
yeah, sure.
The upkeep will drive me crazy. Mm-hmm. And number two, like, I just feel like my hair won't be able to sustain that level of bleaching regularly. So I like to keep it a bit, like, messy.
Yeah.
So I just go to her for maybe highlights around every 6 weeks just to keep it fresh and tighter. And then I wash with a purple shampoo, supplement it with like protein shampoos.
What kind of purple shampoo do you use?
So I use TG.
Okay, cool.
Of course. And sometimes I also do like sulfate free, just between, just to keep it like as gentle on the locks as possible, and just to keep my split ends like at bay. And I also go for trims every, well, I'm keeping my length now, so I pretty much just do a trim every 2 months.
Okay, cool.
But every time I usually do a major color change, sometimes I get really like, I have ADD, and for some reason, like when the seasons change and I get really bored, sometimes I think I wake up and like, I really want to go brunette.
Yeah.
And then I get over it. But then like,
yeah.
So, but anyway, like whenever I do have a major change and bleach my hair again, I typically cut my hair off like a couple of inches just to kind of freshen it up a bit. But
yeah.
For the most part, it's been blonde for a while now.
Yeah, I'm similar. I'm down with the purple shampoo is a game changer, and it's not really something I started until like maybe a year ago, and I've been blonde for a long time. And I feel like it helps so much. And then same, like trims like every few months. I don't go like too crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like you can get away with it.
Right. Yeah.
Especially if you're going for that kind of like natural undone look
exactly.
or whatever.
Which I'm so happy that I can actually kind of pull off. For the most part, because I grew up in the 90s, which means that like I was never like that Kardashian curly barrel curled person ever,
sure.
even to this day. So I know some people, one of my editors is great at doing that first thing in the morning, and I'm like, but how do you snooze? So I'm just like, I am pretty much a wash and wear person when it comes to hair, which is why like if you'll see me, I'm typically always just kind of like in an air dried situation.
Sure.
Even though I blow dry, but like,
sure.
It's always that texture and it's like middle part, like very, very low key.
Yeah. Yeah. Like low maintenance.
Yeah.
I'm so with you. It's the time for that.
Seriously. Yeah. I don't know if I'm ever going to be a high maintenance hair person, which is kind of off brand considering like where I'm working right now. But,
works though.
Yeah, like, I know. And I've always just maintain that your hair always has to be an extension of yourself, which is why like I really, even if it is a low maintenance look, I really advocate for using the highest quality products you can afford, because you know at the end of the day you wear your hair every day. You know, it's not like a designer bag, which, you know, you don't necessarily take with you, you know, everywhere you are. But like from the moment you wake up to the moment you go to bed, like you're with your hair.
Yeah.
So you better make sure that it's on point.
Right.
However way you define that.
Right. And taking care of it properly.
Yeah,
I feel that. So are there any current hair trends that like you're seeing people go wild for? Like, are people doing like the no shampoo method?
Right. Which kind of like I am equally impressed and kind of taken aback by, because my hair type, which is basically like Asian, straight, slightly wavy, frizzy, depending on the humidity level, I can't go more than 2 days without wanting to just pressure wash my hair. Like it has to be showered. Like I can't not wash it. Like I am not one of those lucky women whose hair gets better the dirtier it gets.
Sure.
Like if my hair is dirty, you will definitely tell me. You will see it for yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
You'll see it from across the room. The trend that I really like actually is this kind of like natural. First of all, I love the look of natural hair now that like, you know, the natural hair community, they're wearing their hair out, you know, all in curls. It's so beautiful. I'm so jealous of all of that volume and mm-hmm. texture and personality. And also, I love the look of braids during the summer.
Yes.
Mostly because, like I said, I grew up in the 90s, and that's a very, very 90s thing for me. Like, just French braiding your hair.
Yeah.
It brings back so many memories of school and, like, just kind of, like, that country club feel, that preppy look. So I really love that. I love the whole, like, again, the whole 90s throwback of, like, the blunt bob, which yes. is one of my favorite looks. And
I'm obsessed.
Really feel like after I'm done with this whole, like, long blonde hair situation,
yeah.
that is the look I'm reverting to immediately. Like, yeah. the whole My So-Called Life kind of, like, yeah. one-length chin bob.
It just looks so fresh.
Fresh.
And yeah. healthy.
Yeah, like, and healthy and just, like, really, like... innocent and just super like angst free.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah,
just
absolutely.
Completely like you just woke up without yeah. any problems.
Definitely.
In the world, you know? Yeah. So that I think that my favorite looks probably have to be the 90s
yeah.
Throwback ones.
Absolutely. And that's where we're seeing in fashion and beauty right now, which
right.
is amazing. Yeah. Are there any top hair tips that you've learned at All Things Hair? Maybe something like surprising or something the audience might not maybe be aware of?
Well, like, I would say, like, the top tip, one of the top tips I've ever learned in this job is that water and not shampoo is the number one enemy of hair, especially colored hair.
Sure.
So no matter what you read on any label, on any, like, commercial, it doesn't matter how gentle a shampoo is, it's how often you wash it that matters. So obviously, you know, obviously you still need to wash hair, and that's why people choose the gentlest alternative available, but it's literally water that kind of like brings you to that faded level. So just to keep in mind, obviously
yeah.
you have to wash your hair at some point, which is why like dry shampoo is also a number one, like, you know,
yeah.
number one pick for people with colored hair as well,
yeah.
Which I would recommend too.
Totally.
So yeah, water is a huge thing. And what else? Like, I think that's the thing that kind of like blew my mind.
It's surprising because it's,
yeah.
you always think like,
it's
or
the
read
chemicals,
that
yeah.
it's the shampoo, it's
yeah, yeah,
the product
yeah.
that's like stripping, but
yeah.
you're
it's
saying
the water
it's actually
that
the
opens
water.
Your hair up. So,
sure.
Yeah, that's what makes the color leach out. But,
okay.
Other tips, I don't know, maybe we should visit the site and see, but like
yeah,
off
right.
the top of my head. Yeah.
That's no, that's kind of perfect. Like, that's perfect. And we'll link out to some articles, of course. Do you have favorite Unilever products that you like cannot live without? Maybe like one to two.
Definitely. Well, Nexxus is definitely Nexxus and I talk about them all the time. It's kind of embarrassing. But like Nexxus Humectress and Therapy shampoo and conditioner are legit my big day shampoo and conditioner. Like I'm thinking of taking that bottle with me on my destination wedding. Like
ooh, okay.
Yeah.
That's big.
I know. They're like, I don't know. For some reason they just get my hair type and I always wake up with like the hair I always want for that day, like
okay.
you know, regardless of what weather it is. Also, yeah, and
they're safe on color treated hair.
Yeah, they do.
And
they
you
do
can
have
find
like
them
a line.
Anywhere.
Exactly. And I love like, and it smells like I don't know. They have this faint scent of banana cream pie that just I love it.
Ooh, that sounds good.
yeah. What else? I love how Tresemme is kind of doing their between washes. Range, like I love how I can just use their between wash spray as like a detangler and or a refresher mm-hmm. if I don't wash my hair, so that's great. And I'm a huge yoga and Pilates person too, and sometimes that takes me on the go from a class to a night out or whatever, or vice versa, or to work. And I love anything that kind of bridges that gap, you know, and helps me refresh my hair in between like working out and actually working. So
sure.
anything that gets me presentable during those times is a plus. And, you know, living in New York City, that's a reality for a lot of women. You know, we're always on the go. What else? I also love TG's line, mostly because, like, I feel like they're really cutting edge. And they do fill a lot of gaps, like, in terms of, like, what you need as a person with colored hair, you
sure.
know? Like, they really get it, you know, seeing as they're on the forefront of like hair color innovation and all that.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. How about a dry shampoo? And I have one if you don't.
No, seriously. I love Dove dry shampoo.
That's the one I was going to say.
Exactly. Because like, I never thought I would like be gushing about like a dry shampoo like ever, but like
it's very good.
It's really good, and every time I spray it on my hair, I'm just instantly like 20% happier. I don't know if it's that scent or it's the way that it kind of just fluffs everything up, to the level that I want it to be, that just makes me feel like, oh my gosh, this is finally going to be a good hair day. You know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's just like very uplifting and it's so low key and it's not like pretentious at all. It's just like literally just detoxifies everything that you have on there and then just gets you like to that level of cleanliness and freshness that you really want.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think the biggest takeaway is like in comparison to other dry shampoos, it's incredibly lightweight.
Exactly.
It leaves zero residue
right.
and it's just, you can find it anywhere.
So
it's
fresh.
Like, it's gotta be what, like five,
exactly.
10 bucks?
Yeah.
You would know
even
the price
less.
Point.
Yeah. But like okay. also, it also smells, the scent, I can't stress this enough, is one of my most favorite like hair product scents too. Like,
yeah.
It's between like Baby Fresh and Actually Chic, you know,
yeah.
like
yeah.
you can wear it every day. And I love wearing it at after I work out, especially in the summer.
Yeah.
Like everyone, like every time I spray it on, like I leave it in my gym locker. Every time I spray it on, like someone asks me what perfume I'm wearing. And I'm like, it's just Dove.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So last and final question, and I kind of know the answer to this just by kind of chatting with you, but in a general sense, like what is your approach to beauty? Is it like less is more mm-hmm. sort of?
I am actually, for the most part, I'm a moody kind of beauty person. Like, it depends on my mood. I'm a quadruple Cancer, just to put that in there again. So
what
yeah,
does that mean?
That means I'm very, very moody. No, I'm
okay,
emotional
okay.
and I'm pretty much ruled by like my emotions. But yeah, I, you know, it depends on like the day, but typically like and every day I would say is more low key, very like kind of wash and wear because I already have my routine down pat. I've been doing this for the past 30 years. So yeah, like I just blow dry my hair, shampoo, I wash and condition, I blow dry and that's pretty much it. I don't really curl. I don't do anything. I maybe just part it in the middle, just like that.
Sure.
And then walk out the door. And as for the face and body, it's just your typical like moisturizer, sunscreen, because I guess if you're mixed, I mean, my background is mixed and hyperpigmentation is a huge issue for me being Asian. So that's kind of like what I have to look out for. So yeah, sunscreen is a huge thing. And then just brows, eyeliner, lip gloss, and I'm done.
Call it
so,
a day. I
yeah.
love that.
I mean, I barely, you know, for the evening, maybe I'm going to do maybe a deep eye or a bold lip. But again, it depends on the day, depends on who I'm meeting. But yeah, pretty
okay,
much
cool.
like very low key.
Okay, cool. And
a,
I love
with a statement.
Perfect. And I love that you said sunscreen. That's couldn't be more into like my sun care, especially
exactly.
currently, like the more the better,
yeah,
layering
exactly.
it.
And I feel like, cause you know, I've been seeing more and more, I never used to have freckles. I never freckled and I was so proud of that. And then I moved to the States and then I guess, you know, in your late 30s, plus it's a walking city, very unpredictable, like, and I started seeing freckles that I had never seen before in my life. And I'm like, all right. And I remember hearing before from a dermatologist, she told me that any mole or freckle you're not born with is sun damage. So,
oh, wow. Okay,
so, yeah.
Key tip, everybody. Keep
yeah.
an eye out. But seriously, like
right.
when things come up like that, you've got to go to the derm immediately.
Exactly.
Like you just never know.
Exactly. Or like just, you know, I used to back in like, I think the early 2000s, I went through a self-tanning sunbed phase just to like get with a program, I guess, with everybody else.
yeah.
But I remember looking into the mirror after one session and then seeing that I had a new mole or freckle where there had been none before. Mm-hmm. And I remember freaking out that like the end was near, like, like
yeah.
this is how I'm aging.
Yeah.
So yeah. And like all aging is typically it's aging is 90% genetic. No, 90% sun exposure, 10% genetics.
Wow.
So
that's crazy, but I believe that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I am definitely going to be that old lady wearing like a rash guard to the beach
yeah,
even in
yeah.
like 100 degree weather.
I already am. I sit with an umbrella now
right.
on the beach. Like I don't really sunbathe and
yeah,
my family
yeah.
makes fun of me.
To, but yeah. I mean, honestly, my skin doesn't bounce back as resiliently as it mm-hmm. used to.
Yeah.
Like, before I could actually literally bake on the beach and just wake up, like, just feeling, you know, feeling okay, still glowy. Yeah. Now it's like, oh my God, what are all these lines? You know, like, sure. It's really not a good idea, I guess, at any age, but
sure.
Yeah, definitely sunscreen, everybody, like that song, you know?
Totally. Okay. Last and final question. I lied. Anything exciting upcoming for all things hair? Are you guys looking ahead to fall fashion month? Like what, anything exciting you can share?
Well, just keep an eye out we're already there, but like, please, please do visit our natural hair microsite. Also, please just keep an eye out for more hair stories. It's a series we are continually doing on all things hair, featuring compelling hair stories from different women or men, you know. And basically, they talk about how their relationship with hair has kind of shaped their lives throughout the years, and how big of a role it played into their personal development. Which is, I feel like, a really compelling take on hair too.
Amazing.
Yeah, like all things hair is going to be at New York Fashion Week in September as
awesome.
Usual. So yeah, please keep an eye out for all our runway stories.
Okay, amazing. Lots of exciting things coming up. So thank you so much for coming
thank
on the
you
podcast,
for having me.
Eunice.
Sorry for my astrology ramblings.
No, I love it. It's all new to me. So I think the audience will find a lot of value from it. Thank you so much for coming on. So where can everyone keep up with you?
With me, well, you can keep up with me via my Instagram and Twitter, which is both at Eunichiban, that's Eunichiban. And obviously all things hair too, allthingshair.com. And allthingshair.com has all our like social media info on there too.
Perfect.
So you can find us on Instagram as well.
Awesome. And we'll include it in the show notes.
Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you, everybody. Please
don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. And we will catch you on the next episode. Bye.